Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Eddie O'Sullivan is on the line. Gavin Comiskey of the Irish Times is here in the studio. Hello to you.
How are you?
So the weekend's results, Leinster 57, Montpellier 3, a non-event really for Leinster on Friday. Connacht 63, Zebre 22. Eddie did that game for us here and Off the Ball again. Connacht very, very comfortable. Exeter 31, Ulster 19. Stephen Ferris again, very critical of Ulster. Les Kiss, emotional, angry after the game. And then the standout tie, really, the really brilliant watch on Saturday evening was Glasgow 12, Munster 14. We had that game live here. Dave McIntyre was there alongside Johnny Murphy and Andrew Dunn.
Here's Simon Zebo outside the 22. Needs to beat one defender. Gets it away to Keith Durr as he darts back inside. Sayle outside. Oh, that is clinical. That's a wonderful try. What a finish from Francis Sayle. And Munster do get their try. The acceleration from the Kiwi as he burned the cover on the outside. And that is a cracking score. The first really big moment of quality for Munster. And they lead in this game for the first time, 14-12, with a conversion from the touchline to come.
It's good to win a game with guts like that. It's well documented that, Gregor's got an old Scottish international team there, you know. So when you come out here and you play away from home, with a team who's got a little bit of a momentum like them, you're never going to have an easy game. And we didn't have an easy game, you know. It could have gone any way. And I think our heads were a little bit calmer at the end. You know, we kept composure. So obviously we'll be stupid if we stop here and our aspirations stop here. That would be totally just stupid. But we are proud that we had to reach it. And we know next week will be very important to see who we play. So we will enjoy tonight, you know, and then we'll go back tomorrow and see realistically. Because I thought tactically for 25, 30 minutes, especially after halftime, you know, we were really poor. And then at the end, we were actually really street smart. So there's a lot of work to be done. But I think we will be stupid to put targets out there, you know, because we have a fairly new team together, a fairly new management team together. So it's difficult to gauge where we can go. But, you know, if we don't get a lot of injuries and we keep our form like this, you know, I think we've got a chance of getting somewhere.
Yeah, I think a lot of people increasingly do agree with Razi Erasmus. So, in so many ways, Gav, this game was dead even and competitive. Stats were largely even, territory was even, possession was even, the scoreboard for much of it was even. It was just brilliantly competitive all the way through. There were fights on the ground for the ball every time. There were fights off the ball plenty of the time. It was grit and discipline. The kind of win that must be unbelievably satisfying and almost imbues a team like Munster with as much confidence and belief as a bonus point trouncing of a team might.
That was as good a Munster. That was what Munster used to do for 5-6 years, 04, 05, 06, all the way up until the Leinster start beating them in 2009 and on. They just went, just when they needed it, it was 12-9, they went to the mall and you were like, oh, this is the old Munster, they're going to do this. Mm. And like, well, if you watched Ulster, who were in an even better position coming in the fourth quarter of their game, you didn't have faith in them or you didn't trust them to get it done, but you just could see it. Mm. And what Keith Earls did for Sahili's try when he moved in, that's like a man who was like, you cannot forget me for Ireland selection, even though there's a lot of players in contention there. There was so many little things like that. Now, obviously, it's all getting overshadowed by the targeting of Conor Murray and by what the HIA investigation into Conor Murray, but as a performance, Jan Kleyn, that guy's completely, they need him. He changes the whole dynamic of their front five and brings the whole Irish guys with him. I can start picking through loads of players in this team, but as Razi Erasmus says, if they don't get an injury crisis, there's a serious, serious season, as good as we've ever seen from Munster, if they can just keep, because their second tier players coming in are not as good as their best 20, you know.
Mm. We'll move on to the Murray investigation in a moment. But Eddie, did this elevate Munster, in your opinion, the nature of this win?
Yeah, it was a great game of rugby. I really enjoyed it. Minute 1 to 81, it was just stonking game, like the competitiveness of it. And in fairness, Glasgow really, I think, fronted up. I mean, I think Glasgow knew if they didn't contain Munster's physicality, they could get another hiding, you know, and that's the far Munster at the moment. But they did, except for the lead up to that try. For some reason, Glasgow lost their intensity, dropped, and Munster had a line out. They got them all rumbling again. They had one off runners. They pounded and pounded and pounded. And, you know, they broke them down. And that was the only time they really had them broken down. And I just thought that, you know, it showed Munster's kind of just discipline to keep on going. I think it still begs the question about teams that do contain them physically, like where they go. I think there was an element of luck at the end, which nobody seems to have, you know, raised, that it might have been kind of a sad occasion had Finn Russell actually managed the last bit of the game properly. It just defied all logic. I'm sure Townsend, who's a very smart operator, must have been tearing his hair out as they got that block down from the restart and they were 10 metres out and Russell was in the pocket.
Mm.
And for some reason, he directed the attack wider again and came back. And eventually, Munster just kept getting off the line, drove him back out to 22. It was just criminal-like. That drop goal would have just turned the game again in his head. No, not saying Munster wouldn't have come back and stole it again, but you've got to put it up to a team like that. And for an international half, that level of, you know, unawareness, and then to compound it, they got a line break at the end, well-worked line break out wide, which I thought Glasgow didn't do particularly well throughout the game. I thought they probably were a little bit one-dimensional. I could probably expect a bit more from them, but then Munster did defend very well. But that aside, they got the line break. And then Russell inexplicably gave this ludicrous chip kick over the top, which, you know, was just gobbled up by Munster and just hoofed back to touch. And the game was over. So you've got to give Munster credit for digging out the win. It was Munster of old. You know, they had to work for every yard they won. But Glasgow had a chance to steal it, and they blew it. And, you know, when you get out of it, it's not so much the fact that you got out of that game and you were maybe a little bit lucky at the end, but you dug out the win. It's the value of getting that result on the road, away from home. It creates that sort of a buzz in the camp that it's something's on, you know. You don't want to overthink it, but Munster are feeling at the moment like, you know what, it doesn't matter who we play now. We can get somebody, and on the day we can beat them. They might be better than us on paper, but Munster are in a place now where they're not playing the game on paper anymore. They're playing it in terms of their combination of their energy, and they are in a good spot. Like, and like, if they get the home draw, like, they're not going to back against them in Thomond Park in the quarter final, you know. And that home draw is pretty much is a lock now, unless the wheels completely fall off, you know.
Yeah, there was a fantastic moment where a slightly confused Sky Sports team looked on as the camera cut to the dressing room and the Munster team had gathered around Peter O'Mahony kissing CJ Stander. Mrs. Stander tweeted that CJ doesn't even kiss me like that, and everybody's slightly confused and didn't know what to say. And it turns out they have a forfeit on the team whereby if you get into a big fight with a teammate on the pitch, then you have to make up in front of the whole team by kissing, which is one of the great forfeits. I don't know
that's been around for years.
Is that the done thing, Eddie? Yeah, right. Okay.
We had it in Irish camp as well. Yeah,
did it deliver a few triple crowns? Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. It was, yeah, if you had a row in training, there was a humongous financial fine, or you'd kiss the person. So most people went for the snog, you know.
It's going to do rugby's reputation great, as usual.
Yeah. That's thrown a long time. There's nothing known that.
Yeah, but they were, like, there, as you said, that line you had, Eddie, there's a sense that something is on here. Just the body language in the dressing room. Yeah.
I think so. I think that it's results like that, you know. There's a bit of, the two things about that result is, they dug out the result on the road away from home, against one of the best teams in the league, arguably in Europe. And they had a little bit of luck at the end, which often adds a little bit of spice. You know, it's going to break our way. Finn Russell, I thought, really, you know, didn't really should have. If Finn Russell missed a drop goal, I would have said fine, but he never even took it. So my point is, Munster will say, you know what, it's one of those days where we could have lost, but we didn't. There's something on here, and they get that sense of energy. You could bottle it, you could win every year, but at the moment, it's been to fall that way for Munster.
Yeah. And didn't they completely expose Stuart Hogg? Had just gone off for the yellow card for that, the new rule, high hit on Andrew Conway, and straight away they went the other side and exposed the numbers. So like, they did show that straight up, like that. Glasgow will look back at it and go, we lost because of that high hit. Losing that man at that time was so crucial. But like, Munster were completely deserved of their win. It was as good a one as we've seen from them this season.
I do want to ask you about the treatment of Conor Murray and you know, the medical treatment as well. But just a point that Peter O'Reilly had in his piece yesterday in the Sunday Times, which is worth mentioning. You know, he makes the point, O'Reilly in the Times, that it's 11 wins in 12 games since they lost Anthony Foley in October. But with the greatest respect to everyone affected by that terrible loss, perhaps it's time to start looking at further explanations for their transformation this season. And he says, it's barely been mentioned, for example, that this is the first season when the squad have trained at a single state-of-the-art base at the University of Limerick, rather than the age-old and faintly ludicrous practice of swapping between Limerick and Cork. And he's a quote from Niall O'Donovan, that's been the main difference. We're actually training together as a team for the first time. It's a big plus. us. We trained a Tuesday in Limerick and a Thursday in Cork. It worked for a long period, but the way the game has gone, club sides train better than we did. It's the quality of time they have together. It's what happens off the pitch, the analysis, the sitting down, the talking, the repping things. They can walk through things indoor and UL, so when they go out on the pitch, it's quality stuff.
They've also signed, essentially, because Klein was injured a lot last season, Tauta has only just arrived, and Blenahall was injured.
Yeah.
They've got three Southern Hemisphere players who are growing really close to world class. They mightn't be right there yet, but they're not far off at all.
Yeah.
These guys are international players if they were from any other country already. They're going to be Irish internationals.
So there's a lot going on here. So on Murray, right, first of all, clearly they target him. Speaking of world class, let's target Conor Murray and let's hit him late, or let's get to him one way or another for his box kicks.
There was a really interesting thing, Joe, during the game. Gerry Flannery, Graeme Simmons from Sky went to him and he goes, and if you actually look back in it, I think Murray Kinsella from 42 actually tweeted it. There was the bit where they targeted him in the previous game that Glasgow played him. So they actually said pre-game, they went, look, this guy's sliding down on our ankles of the standing leg of our scrum half, which they'd made aware to the officials, and they're being allowed to do it again. And Murray lost the head and almost threw a dig at Josh Strauss for the cheapest of cheap shots that can end your season.
Well, I was just going to say, surely it's not within the rules that you can go at the standing leg.
Well, look, if they don't deal with this, it's going to happen in the Six Nations against him. We already see how Johnny Sexton gets targeted over the years with late hits, which we saw on Friday. With Murray now, there it is. You can do this. The All Blacks did it in Dublin.
Yeah.
When you call a late hit, the problem is it's not a tackle per se. You know, it's like a late hit is when somebody releases a pass and you follow through and you hit them late. This is not a late tackle in a sense. It's a block down. Mm. So it's in that kind of. I'm not saying this is right by any stretch of the imagination. This is how you kind of get away from it. Mm. Like get away with it with a referee. It's not a tackle. It's a block down, and you're committed to the block down, and you're in the air before the guy kicks the ball, and you could be committed from 5 yards
away. But a lot of the time, it didn't look like they were going to get there. It was tokenism stuff.
But you don't have to.
You almost need to be injured to get decided in this case.
If you're Conor Murray, would you not rather they gave you a late hit and, you know, barreled into your chest as opposed to hit you even early or on time and went at your standing leg?
He was livid, and it affected his performance because he started trying to go in for king hits, which is one of the reasons why he might have got injured, because he was so annoyed. He composed himself and said, right, I'm going to hit these guys hard back.
But I think he knew he was in danger of being injured. The standing leg surely isn't in play, Eddie.
No, it's not. And I think the referee could have given him more protection. A stroke to referee to protect him.
Right.
But when a guy dives for a block down like that and he's in the air and he comes down then after the ball's left the foot, it's not technically laid. I think they do. This is probably the next thing they need to manage better, like, because there's so much box kicking now from the base of the ruck that guys are going to get in there, and you should be able to dive and block a kick, but you should block the kicking foot.
Yeah.
And if you take out the support leg, it should be a penalty or a yellow card, however they want to play it. But I do agree that it's an area of the game again that has become a little bit fraught, because it's now become an issue because this is happening. Fighters are diving in from a distance to block a kick. And in the kick, I think last Saturday, it was more than that. I think they were trying to ruffle up Conor Murray. And they did get to him in a sense. They got him a bit irate, which will put him off his game, which is exactly what they're trying to do. But they could have hurt him. And I think the referee should have given him a little more protection, even under the law.
Even the touch judges, Eddie, could have got it, because the ref can't see it.
Well, when you say the ref, you're talking about the touch judges. Yeah. They're all connected. It's just about telling the referee. And they could have had a word and said, like, the next time somebody lands like that, it's going to be a penalty or a yellow card, and it would have stopped. But as long as they were getting away with it, they're going to do it. But it's an age-old thing. If you can ruffle up the most influential player on the field, you rough them up. And that was their way of doing it. They felt they could dive in on the block down and follow through. And they played it to the edge. I understood why he was annoyed. And I thought the referee could have done a better job protecting him. A word with Glasgow would have solved it, but he didn't bother.
Yeah, and there was one, if you cite Josh, one of them, they're all kind of borderline, they're all on the edge, but it was won by Josh Strauss. If you cite him for that, that's the message sent into the Six Nations, that's the message sent to the All Blacks come the Lions tour, because this is the key figure for Ireland and the Lions. Mm. He's established this now. And again, if you get to him, you can get to all these teams.
Yeah, Sexton, Murray. Why is it every time we get a world-class player, they just take him out on us?
Because we only have one Conor Murray.
Yeah.
We don't have another Johnny Sexton.
Munster face an investigation by the European Champions Cup organisers over their handling of the head injury sustained by Conor Murray. So he took a hit in the 60th minute. Tim Swinson, the elbow, caught Murray's head. I've seen it reported in places. I don't know if we can really judge it with any definity, but that he appeared to lose consciousness briefly. That's inconclusive on television from what I saw. But he played on, certainly. And then Josh Strauss ran through him for a tackle 5 minutes later, and he was taken off for a HIA. And he returned 6 minutes later. He'd passed the HIA. So European Professional Club Rugby have asked Munster to provide an account of their actions over the incident. Obviously, World Rugby guidelines state a player should be removed from the field of play if there is even a suspicion that he may have lost consciousness.
We have another watershed moment here with this investigation for two reasons. Should it have been a HIA? Okay, so if they investigate that and they go, okay, look, it looked like he was sparked, so there shouldn't have been a HIA. And then the other thing is, okay, it looked like he was sparked and he passed the HIA. Yeah. And he did it within 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Johnny Sexton, who did have a neck injury, and everyone accepts that from what they said afterwards, but Johnny Sexton did a HIA within 4 minutes after the Franz Steen late hit.
Yeah.
So, like, how quickly can you do these things now? And supposedly, so that was the question we asked on Friday night as well. Can it be done in 4 minutes? Is it not supposed to be between 10? Like, the Premiership had extended it to 13 minutes to do this head injury assessment. Right. But supposing you can breeze through it.
Well, Barry O'Driscoll, obviously, on the show, and we'll just, you know, we'll keep mentioning this because there are a lot of people who have a big problem with the HIA situation, don't believe in it. Dr. Barry O'Driscoll says it has no clinical basis, says it's an experiment. He was speaking to RT over the weekend. He said, Conor Murray should have been off. Concussion was suspected. He's a history of suspected concussion. He had a brain injury. Both were put back on because they passed the protocols. So,
and World Rugby's quote in the George North press release to say that they were disappointed with all that, but we're going to move on, was the HIA is successfully protecting players at the elite level.
Yeah. We can't preempt the investigation, Eddie. I don't know if Conor Murray was knocked out or not. But certainly the HIAs specifically now are coming under extreme pressure, and people are talking about those in particular a lot.
Well, on the face of it, they don't seem to do what they're supposed to do. And that's the big problem, I think, is when you see a player get a blow to the head for whatever reason. And we saw the George North one. I mean, people saying he wasn't unconscious. It's amazing to me that he could say that he was out cold. And then he passes the HIA and comes back. I think that raises the question. The HIAs are not doing what they says in the tin. You know, like, guys can pass those after a blow to the head. Now, Barry O'Driscoll, who I know well, he was on the RFU committee, and he's been a leader in this area for years. I mean, he stepped away from World Rugby because of this. Mm. His belief is that once you have a head trauma of any description, there should be no HIAs. You should be off, end off. Because he's a doctor. He's an expert in the area. He says that a head trauma is a head trauma, and just because you don't have any symptoms of a concussion at that time does not mean you're not concussed. Mm. Concussion symptoms can occur within minutes, within hours after a concussion.
Yeah.
So you can be fine after a head trauma and you can actually be concussed. And the problem then is if you receive a second trauma on top of the first one, now you're in really dangerous territory. Mm. And then...
Well, you can die. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that's very dangerous. So my point is, Barry O'Driscoll doesn't obviously have any confidence in the HIAs, but he's been against this notion of assessing a player from the get-go because he says, and they have every reason to believe the man, he's a doctor and he's a specialist in this area, that once you have a head trauma, the passing a HIA tells you nothing. You know, you can have that, you can have a head trauma, you can have a concussion, and it doesn't show up in the HIAs. So that's the bigger problem that they're going to have to come to a conclusion on. Like, and I think it's even more now in doubt, the fact that people have passed HIAs, like George North, and then didn't play for a month after it.
Mm. Well, Brian O'Driscoll passed one before, and Aina Falvey said, you're still not going back on.
Yeah, it should be noted, because we are putting it under question, and Barry O'Driscoll is one medical expert.
Yeah.
The Berlin Conference on Concussion, which was all the world leaders in concussion, they rubber-stamped the HIA. So they said it was best practice, and that was in October.
Okay.
So it's not going anywhere just now. Mm. But what players are competitive animals. And we know from the past that they've worked out the tests on concussions as well. And there's no reason why. They probably have, to a certain degree, worked out, okay, head injury assessments, here's what's happened. Make sure you jog off the pitch, for starters, because they all seem to jog off the pitch. Right? You get in there, so they all know what's going to happen when they get it. So they want to get back on the pitch more than anything else.
Yeah.
And also, if there's a suspicion of a guy coming off, you're supposed to not let him back on. But if I'm a player, if I'm Conor Murray and I'm in the middle of a 70th minute of a massive European game, I'm going to demand a HIA when I get taken off that pitch if there's been a knock to my head. Why wouldn't I? You know what I mean? So they have to be protected from themselves. Again, I'm not saying Conor Murray had concussion on the weekend, and he passed HIA.
He passed it, no, for sure.
And he came back on. But this investigation, it'd be very clear to see. It'd be very interesting to see what they come up with at the end of this week or whenever it comes out.
Because but I think it's far from solved. Like, this is not going away.
Oh, yeah.
Because every week there's going to be somebody get a knock on the head. Like, it's collision sport. It's almost impossible to avoid people colliding with each other, especially their heads.
Yeah.
So this will come up again and again. And it does go back to I know the HIAs have been passed and everything, and everyone says they're all that in a bag of chips. But if you have players passing them who have had some of their head trauma, it begs the question, are they protecting the player enough? And Barry O'Driscoll would say no.
Yeah.
That's a discussion. And it's a bit of a nightmare, because if you were to remove every player from a game of rugby that had a head trauma of some description, you could run out of players in some games.
Now you've hit the key point. That is the key point. If we take off every player who gets any reasonable bang to the head, where it's done. It's done.
Yeah, so that's what they have to have something.
That is why this is so difficult. And, you know, tied in with your point, Eddie O'Driscoll, when he was on, also made the point that, you know, in medical practice, the reason they might ask some of the questions that are asked in HIA after an impact is less so that they can send someone back out in a pitch. It's more so when they go back and ask them the same questions in 6 hours, they can see if there's been a decline.
We're having a lot of difficulties with this as well, though, because it's not from under 20s. It's not in the amateur game. So guys are hiding concussions on the pitches potentially to stay on in games, because it's, if they have so much faith in it. Now, I know they don't have medical people on the sides of pitches right down into the amateur level, but if they've so much faith in it, why don't we see it in under 20s in the Six Nations or something like that, you know?
Let's draw a line under that, because we'll come back to it and we'll see what the outcome of the investigation is. Eddie, I just caught some of your commentary with of the Connacht match on Off the Ball, and I was just floating by, and you were making a point about the scrum. And I think I was briefly running by, but I heard you say something along the lines of the scrum is just no longer a set piece that can be relied upon.
No, because there are so many possible outcomes that aren't that accurate. I mean, it is a huge risk in taking a scrum, because, like, for example, in the engagement, one of your props can slip and fall, and it's a penalty in wet conditions. The referee, you can engage with the best intentions, and the other side take a fade, and you take two steps forward, free kick. So there's so many, like, the number of scrums that still end up in infringements, and even now they're trying to avoid the infringements. But if the scrum goes down and the ball's at number 8's feet, they're saying, "Well, play away." You know, they're trying to manage the scrum as best they can, but it's a very unreliable source of possession because there's so many anomalies in the adjudication by referees. And to be fair to referees, I don't envy them at scrums trying to figure out what went wrong. And a lot of them, you know, the ones where there's a second collapse, you know, the next time anyone flinches, it's a penalty just to get out of there. He just wants to get away from it.
Yeah.
Or a free kick. And his nightmare is to say, "We'll take it on the scrum," you know. That's, to me, it makes it an unreliable source of possession, that if you have a choice of putting the ball into the corner or taking a scrum, you are rolling the dice. Yeah. And we've seen it a few times that you take the scrum and the prop slips, or you engage the wrong way, that you take a step forward and you get pinged.
Yeah.
And it's within the law, but it's just, to me, it's a pity, because it does define our game, you know, I mean, the scrum, but it's getting harder and harder to manage. And I think it's still, the inconsistency still exists there. That makes it very difficult. And the pity about it is, it's the best source of possession to attack from, because you've got 8 defenders locked into one place, so there's buckets of space. And we just can't get that part of our game right, which I think would make it even all the better for attacking rugby, you know.
Funny, it was a feature of the artificial pitch that scrums didn't collapse as much, because everybody could hold their footing. It was also a feature of the kicking. You could kick from the halfway line because you had such secure footing. It also looks better, the artificial pitch, in the depths of winter.
I don't know if I'd want my ankles or knees. I was just going to say,
I presume it's terrible for ankles and joints, but from a spectacle, I thought it actually added to the game.
Yeah. There's no doubt that's exactly what you've given the upside and the downside for the same reason. Because your studs hold the surface, it's easier to scrummage on it. It's easier for kicking, but because your studs hold, there is no give if you roll or you get hit, and your studs lock, and your ankles and knees are very vulnerable. And the other one is that, you know, you see the ball popping out of the rucks for no reason. You know, somebody breathes on it and it pops out the side. you nearly have to have your hand on the ball always, because it doesn't sit into the, like it does in grass. It sits on top and it's very vulnerable to popping over the rocks. That's a small one, but I think the problem is the injury thing with joints, because the studs lock in that surface with such a good grip. You don't have any kind of give at all when you roll your ankle.
CJ Stander picked up some poor Glasgow lad and pounded him into the surface that would normally break on grass. So there is, I don't know if it's the best thing for your body, but it gets us through the winter of rugby anyway.
You were watching Leinster 57, Montpellier 3. Did you tell us last Monday this was going to be a big game, a good game?
Yeah.
What happened?
And it was.
So did I, by the way.
Right, okay. It was
a great game, yeah.
I have to say.
I'm guilty as charged.
But they were, Montpellier were exceptionally competitive until Frans Steen went off, and still they were losing 14-3. Leinster were as good as we've seen them in 4 or 5 years. This new Leinster team were, to get to 14-3, even before Steen walked for whatever letter of the law for the red card hit, they were fantastic.
Right.
They were brilliant. Every single system was working well. Jack Conan, if Peter O'Mahony got a concussion there, if he can't come back, his place on the Irish bench is under threat. This guy was fantastic.
Hat-trick.
Yeah, he was hat-trick. You know, I actually was there. Jerry was doing a report and I was there doing, I'll do a player watch, I'll pick a player and all that. And after 15 minutes, I went, I'm going to write a paragraph about every single Leinster player. Because by then, every single player had made it. I was just going, God, I haven't seen much of Tadhg Furlong or Josh Van der Flyer. And Van der Flyer comes storming across the pitch and empties some guy and gets up over the ball. And Furlong cleans the ruck. It was like there was a guy, the performance from 1 to 15, and then Rob Kearney came on. Like Jake White like threw his hands in the air at the end. He was like Issa Nasiwa, who was just literally the All Black that never was because of those 90 seconds for Fiji. He goes off. Jake White was like, he goes off, and on comes Rob Kearney, who's like, I want my 15 jersey for the Six Nations, and comes in like blood and guts, you know. They were superb. Like, and it's not over-egging it. It's not going on about Leinster and all that. This is they keep going up a notch every single game. The impact of Stuart Lancaster has been fantastic.
Yeah.
This guy's completely refixed his reputation as a top-level coach. Leo's running the show above everyone. They're looking so good in every area.
Is he over-egging it, Eddie?
No, I thought there was an excellent performance. I thought I couldn't see him losing the game even before Frans Steen went off.
No, it was done. Like, yeah, definitely.
They were tearing him apart. Probably Frans Steen cost them probably another 25 points at the end, but they were still going to win it at a canter with the bonus point. I thought the game plan was excellent. I thought, obviously Montpellier came to play and be very aggressive and, you know, kind of muscle their way to a victory, but they moved them around brilliantly. But I thought the Montpellier defence was very, very poor in the outside channels, where Leinster went after them, and they got them numerous times out wide because they didn't know what they were at. So you had a big team who weren't able to play at that pace, which is, again, when you think about it, we saw this in Galway when Connacht, you know, gave Toulouse a pounding, a big physical team who couldn't run around, and Connacht dragged them all over the sports ground and they fell apart. There's a bit of that the other night. Like, top 14 rugby is that attritional, in-your-face, one-off runners just pounding into the dirt. Like, they're big teams, and when you move them around, I think a lot of them struggle in their conditioning. Their conditioning isn't up to the level it is in this part of the world.
There's a few fatties out there, right, Eddie, isn't there? You can see.
Yeah, I mean, it was the same in the Toulouse game in Galway, and I'd say that would be the, you know, Pat Lamb's, you know, plan next weekend, is just let the ball rip from everywhere down in Toulouse and let them worry about trying to get it. And I think there was an element of that. That's why I thought Montpellier were in trouble from the jump, because they had 2 tries on the board and they were cruising, and then Steen, the red card, it was over. But I thought Leinster's game plan was excellent. It was, and they were very accurate.
What did you think of Sexton's range of passing, Eddie? I thought it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, Sexton is very, very good at everything. Like, he's one of these guys that does everything very, very well, including, you know, trying to kill guys when he tackles them. But he ran the game really well. He was, like, I was kind of worried that he hadn't got a kind of a... We thought this game would be a lot tougher, that he hadn't had a lot of games under his belt and that he might be a little bit ring rusty, but he wasn't, in fairness to him. I thought he had a great game. But it was a fantastic performance. I mean, nobody saw a 50-point drub, and I think if Steen sat on the pitch, it wouldn't have been 50 probably. But I think they'd pushing around 40 points because they were so much better than Montpellier and everything they did. And Montpellier were poor in defence. They couldn't stick with the pace. So it was right up there. You give credit where credit is due. Mm.
Connacht might get into Europe without even getting a bonus point, Joe.
I was just going to say, so we'll finish in this point. So Leinster on Friday away to Castra.
Because there's no point talking about Ulster because they've cleared their season.
Yeah. Home quarter with a win for Leinster. Bonus point puts them the top side, more than likely. Ulster-Bordeaux is a dead rubber. We'll come back to Ulster. They were very poor again and Les Kiss was angry afterwards. Munster at home to Racing, obviously looking for that bonus point win for seeding and to secure home quarter final. And then Toulouse-Connacht. So a Connacht win secures qualification. A losing bonus point could get them
definitely
through as well. We'll get them
Luna's
through.
Bonus point. Because look at the other teams that are in there. There's like Toulon have to win in Saracens. Glasgow have to win in Leicester. Mm. They're easily losable ones. And like, if they lose those games, Montpellier and Northampton, with like 16 points, could get you into the quarterfinals now. So Connacht are sitting on 18. Bonus point and they're out the gate, definitely.
Okay. So is there a reasonable chance that they could go to Toulouse on Sunday, lose, no losing bonus point, and still make it through?
The difference is 15 points between Toulouse and Connacht. So if they lose within that, they still finish second on 18 points, and 18 points gets you into the quarters.
Okay. Well, that gives them something to aim for. You'd give them a reasonable chance of going there and not losing by 15, Eddie?
I would, of course, yeah. I mean, unless Toulouse, have learned from Galway, if they look at that game, they'll say what happened, and they'll realise that Connacht dragged them all over the place and they just weren't able to cope with it. So they have a choice now of maybe they'll say, well, we won't change. We'll just have more ball at home and we'll just pommel the hell out of them. Or they'll pick a team that are more lively in their feet and they'll be able to match Connacht. But if they don't have a plan to stop the Connacht attack, which hasn't changed now for a year, everyone's got to figure it out. If you don't adapt to it, they will pull you apart. It's just that they play so far out in the wide channels. Unless Toulouse make an adaption, they're very vulnerable. And I don't know. Sometimes they don't even look at the opposition, just do what they want to do. So, and Toulouse are historically like that. They believe in themselves. So I wouldn't be shocked if Connacht got on there and beat them. If Connacht get the ball and they play with the accuracy they've been doing, and Toulouse haven't given them any credit, they could catch them. They've won in Toulouse a number of years ago, so they won't be afraid of it. And look, they've nothing to lose by going down here and just having a lash, let it rip, which they've been doing anyway. Like, it's ready made for them, and hopefully it's a dry day down in Toulouse and they can do what they want to do. But I wouldn't put it past them to beat Toulouse, to be honest with you.
Right. I'm not putting any of last week's winnings on it, but they have a chance, yeah.
Okay. Gavin Comiskey, the Irish Times. Eddie O'Sullivan on the line. Thanks, lads.